This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. There are certain terms that we use when we talk about race, color, white, black, and so on. But in these conversations, whiteness is frequently the thing that remains invisible. A new podcast miniseries is hoping to change that. Seeing White shines a spotlight on white people and whiteness, raising questions about where the idea of a white race came from and how the meaning of whiteness has changed throughout the centuries. The miniseries is part of the podcast Seen on Radio, produced by John Bewin, who's the audio program director at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University, and he joins me now. Welcome back, John.
Hey, Frank. Good to be here, always.
Always, and also with us today for the first time is Chenjerai Kumanyika. He is a scholar and a journalist in a recurring role in the Seeing White series. Chenjerai, welcome to The State of Things.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good to have you. I want to start with a clip. Of a show that I think, John, I'm told, got you started on all of this or thinking about it. This was on TV in the summer of 2016 and in many ways, I'm told, inspired the show. It's from comedian and actor D.L. Hewley.
Already, I mean, we often talk about, you know, what's going on with Donald Trump. Did you ever think he would even get this far?
No, but I think I'm not shocked that he is.
You're not? Why?
No, because I think that ultimately America's aspirational. Like, to me, Obama is what we would like to be.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Donald Trump and his supporters are what we are.
Hey.
They are what
you
we
right?
are. Listen, we want to be different. Like, we'll put Harriet Tubman on the front of a $20 bill,
uh-huh.
but leave Andrew Jackson on the back. So we have a slave on the front and a slave owner on the back. So even when black people are on money, we still got a supervisor. So,
That's D.L. Hughley, taped on the summer of 2016, and I'm here with audio producer John Bewin talking about the podcast miniseries that he hosts, Seeing White. So tell us more about your reaction to that clip, John, and what got you going.
Yeah, well, it was just during a time when I was thinking about a project like this, and it just struck me as a very powerful statement. I'm talking about the first part of that where he says Barack Obama is who we want to be and Donald Trump and his supporters are who we are. And part of the question is who's we in that statement? Yeah. Is that who we are as a country? And I found myself having this reaction, like when you say we, don't count me in that we, right?
Right, right. Right.
But then also what he's saying, I think, is very profound, which is who are we as a country, that there's some gap between the way we think of ourselves and who we think we are versus who we really are that's being revealed here in this process. And that, to me, it struck me as part of a larger thing that was going on in my head actually over the last few years, really, I would say, going back to around, say, Trayvon Martin's death and Michael Brown's death and moving forward, that there seemed to me so much stuff going on with police shootings and Black Lives Matter movement and this drip of things coming out from social media that revealing this kind of deep reservoir of racism in this country, that there was this kind of sense of the lens of the culture almost sort of turning towards white people and say, what is up with you all at long last, right?
Right. But then the problem becomes, if you want to then generate a conversation about whiteness and about assumptions we make about race and conversations about sort of baseline ideas that we hold, being the white guy who's running the show becomes your problem that as a self-aware producer like you is a challenge, right? What do I do about that?
Right. And I actually played with that in the introductory episode of the series, sort of pointing out that, you know, that on one level I feel better qualified to look at whiteness than what I've done through much of my career, which is to report on race, meaning like reporting on the lives of people of color. But on the other hand, I feel unqualified to look at whiteness precisely because I'm white.
Right, right. And the I'm cool right excuse almost becomes the problem. So then you decide, well, certainly you're going to need somebody to help you out with this. You decide to get a scholar and a thinker who is African-American, and this is where you bring Chenjerai into the conversation. But I want to get a clip of the phone call that you made to get us going on that. We'll talk to Chenjerai about sort of how he responded to all that. Let's listen to that phone call.
So I'm doing this this crazy project looking at whiteness, and I'm just not sure I'm not sure I'm the right person for the job. I'm a little concerned about my perspective as a white dude, and thinking I maybe could use some backup, somebody to kind of check me a little bit, and bring in, you know, help flesh out the story with the perspective, your perspective as a person of color in this world. What do you think?
Right. You're not asking me to speak for all people of color, are you?
Yes. Of course.
Okay. Good. Because, yes, that's what I do. So, all right.
From the podcast miniseries Seeing White, I'm here with the show's host, John Biewen, recurring guest Chenjerai Kumanyika. So, Chenjerai, in that, I want to know what was going on in your mind when John said, I want to do this show about whiteness, and I hear a, What was going through your head at that moment?
Yeah, well, I'm skeptical of the kind of conversation that John was could have been posing that we hear whenever they have, like, invite a black scholar or pundit on to have the conversation about race. I'm skeptical of that. I think that there's things going on in that conversation that are limiting. And so I was worried about reproducing that. I was also, I had all these fears, and I kind of talk about them in the episode. I mean, I also felt pressure not just to speak for all African Americans, as we're often put in the position to do, but also to be an expert on these issues. You know, my area of scholarly expertise is more in media studies and things to do with media. And, you know, but there are scholars such as Nell Painter and Dr. Ibram Kendi and Dorothy Roberts who really have specialized in this particular topic. So, you know, John already planned to go that route, and we kind of discussed that. And I felt like that moment in our conversation was a way, in a way, a gentle way to teach other media outlets and other people maybe what's missing from the quote-unquote national conversation on race.
And I'm guessing this is a work in progress, so the conversations you had along the way shaped the show as you went. Chenjerai, let me talk with you about sort of those conversations and how things have changed even from that initial moment or what you thought you were getting into.
Yeah, I mean, I think It's been interesting to have the kind of journalism, the combination of journalism storytelling that John is so good at and the conversation and the freedom. I mean, one thing that's different about this particular way we're doing it is, you know, in another kind of radio format, I felt like there'd be more pressure for me to be faster in what I was saying and maybe not to be able to go as deep in the critical part of it, you know, to really push on it and say, well, we're asking the wrong question here and things like that. So this has been good in that regard. And I think one of the things that John and I have tried to keep our compass on is to actually unpack whiteness. And so I've been going on a journey of actually learning. I know what it's a little bit about this from a scholarly standpoint, but what does it look like through his eyes?
Well, let me ask John about that, because that's one of the things you took on very early in episode two, kind of where this construct of race came from and how whiteness became the baseline.
Yes. And we, you know, I think a lot of people have heard this kind of general idea. Race is a social construct. It's not, you know, it's not real in genetic terms or so on and so forth. But I don't think most of us, I certainly hadn't heard anybody kind of lay out, tell it as a story, right, where it came from. How did it get, who invented it? And actually in that episode, Professor Ibram Kendi gives us a name and a date of a Portuguese guy in the 15th century who effectively invented whiteness and actually did it really by inventing blackness, and did that for the purpose of justifying the slave trade, right? So that the Portuguese were some of the first to be hauling people out of Africa and various parts of Africa into slavery. And this guy who was literally commissioned by a slave trader, the Prince of Portugal, basically lumped all those people together and called them black and said they were inferior beasts. And then so his argument is that in that process, that created whiteness, because you can't really have blackness without white.
Yeah, I think that's one of the issues, that you can even get to the point where you say, okay, well, race is a social construct, but still there's a default idea that, yeah, everybody does this. And so that's a neutral concept. We all make distinctions between blackness and whiteness. No, somebody invented it. And in the case of race, it was in the service of capitalism, which needed slavery to develop the wealth that it did, both through its financial institutions and its agricultural institutions, so that some people, namely white people, could get something for nothing. which is what they're afraid of losing now. But Chandra, let me ask you, if that does that help, like knowing that? So we've just spread that out to now a public radio audience, 40,000 people who listen to public radio. If they hadn't heard that already, they've just heard that now, and they're digesting that. Does that change things?
I think it's not. It's counterintuitive, because the most of the conversations that I hear about race are that there's a fundamental not lack of understanding. Like, if we could just drink beer together,
yeah,
you know, or if we could just, and it's not. And what I think we're unpacking with this history is that, you know, the project of slavery didn't happen because folks did not understand, because white folks did not understand that black people were human. It was actually, they did understand that they were human, and they needed a system to subjugate and divide humans, you know, to make that system work. And that, so what you're dealing with is a power struggle, not a lack of understanding. You read Las Casas' journals. I mean, when he encountered the Arawaks, I mean, he was very understanding of their culture, and just, and yet, you know, this genocide occurred. So I think that there's deep implications for how we talk about race when we understand it in this historical way, but it's very different from how we usually talk.
And there's a question of whiteness and then regional differences too, John. In episode 6, you examine the idea that when America tries to, when it does, examine its racial sins, you know, the North sort of lets itself off. There's a, well, we didn't do that. So, and you know, I wouldn't go to the South. Oh, that's where those rednecks are. There's something holier and more sanctimonious about the North.
Absolutely.
Tell us about that episode.
Yeah, and I come at that as a someone born and raised in Minnesota. Now I've been in North Carolina now for 16 mm-hmm. years or something, but that's something I've noticed for a long time. And I was able, we were able to go at it, and I think a fairly entertaining way, but hopefully also a way that was somewhat illuminating. And interviewed a number of my friends here who are white Southerners, and particularly who have spent time up north and endured that kind of superiority of white Northerners who feel so innocent.
Among them, author and scholar Tim Tyson, who is Southern born and spent some time up in Wisconsin.
When people heard our accent, they would ask us where we were from, and we'd tell them, and they would say, well, how do you like it here? And we liked it very much. So, and also we were being polite. So we began to tell them all the things that we really liked about Wisconsin so far. And when they, you know, people liked that for a little while, but then when they'd gotten all they wanted to interrupt us. And they always said the same thing. Well, it's not perfect. They wanted us to know that we had not dropped into paradise. And they would say, well, you know, we've got these people from Chicago coming up here to get on the welfare. And they would explain, you know, I think Wisconsin's welfare payments were $18 a month more than Illinois' or something. And they had this idea that their lavish generosity and the dependent and lazy African Americans were flooding over the border into Wisconsin to get on the welfare. And this was almost universal. People told us this story over and over again.
Writer and historian Tim Tyson talking in an episode of the podcast miniseries Seeing White. I'm here with the show's host and producer John Biewen and recurring guest scholar and journalist Chenjerai Kumanyika. What did you think, Chenjerai, of that episode?
I mean, I think it's really important because to have all those specific examples of Northern racism, because I think that this way of trying to think about the South as the only place with like these backwards racial attitudes is part of kind of, in a way, letting America off the hook, right? This isn't an American problem. It's not really baked in to our system. It's just that Southerners' attitudes haven't really caught up. And, of course, that's not true at all, right? This is baked in. And I think that has real relevance for battles about equality today because, you know, there's issues with police brutality, with segregation, all these kinds of things don't map onto some kind of North-South divide, right? They're as much of a problem where I am now in New York as they were, as they are in any Southern city.
It seems to me, John, that this podcast does more than just point, you know, sort of stick its finger in the chest of those racists out there. I mean, you have to make yourself pretty vulnerable as the liberal guy who's not a racist, but You know, I mean, that sort of thing where I'm a liberal, I'm cool, right? And then be subject to some of the things that Chandra is going to call you on, right? I'll get back to you in a minute, Chandra, but I might ask John about that, about whether that was intentional in this podcast, sort of laying yourself bare.
Well, I guess it was, yeah. And I'm actually comfortable. This is one of the early conversations Chandra and I had too. Was, you know, are we sort of preaching to the choir? And I ended up feeling that even if we are, and I'm sure this is true, people who are coming to this podcast and then coming back again are people who are probably at the, you know, the 80th percentile and above in terms of thinking about race. I'm talking about white people. But I'm just fine with that, because I think those of us who are kind of, you know, liberal and thoughtful about these issues, we've got a hell of a lot to learn too. And if we're only talking to people like me, I think that's actually useful and important.
Well, Chandra, what about you? I mean, are we preaching to the choir on this, and is there a value in that? And is there a way, you know, sort of who do you see this pitch toward, and what's the effect?
Well, people who really enjoy the podcast have told me that it's a really nice way, fascinating and interesting way to learn what winds up being a very deep and substantive history. That, like, I just don't know of another way that you're going to get that than listening to, like, a 30, 40-minute episodes where it's really compelling and at the same time you're coming away with all this insight. But I think, you know, yeah, I mean, it's who you're talking to. It gets tricky. I mean, I think there's something to learn for everyone. I just want to say, like, John, I think, walks in kind of a little bit like, oh, I'm a white guy who doesn't really understand. And I think he does know far more than what he indicates. But there is a learning for both of us, and I think that even for black folks, there's a learning that has to happen. Because, again, you have to be careful. Like, as an African-American, there's things I understand about race from my lived experience. But, again, that's not the same as, like, what's in a book by Dr. Nell Painter or by Dorothy Roberts. Right? Everyone has to study that.
I'm going to leave it there. Chandra Ikumanyika, professor of communication studies at Clemson University, a journalist and recurring guest of the podcast miniseries Seeing White. John Biewen is an audio program director at the Center for Documentary Studies and the host. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow.